Tonight, we're going to continue with Rus. And what this section over here, remember, each night we try to sort of focus on a particular idea or theme. So for me, going back a number of years, I remember I was on the way back to Eretz Israel from South Africa for a Beit HaZvanim, and it was Yom HaShoah. That was the day I was flying, and so it was El Al, and El Al had all the Holocaust movies back to back. And so the two movies I had back to back that day was The Pianist, which is really a fabulous movie, and then they also had immediately following that Life is Beautiful. Now, for those of you who've seen Life is Beautiful and The Pianist, they couldn't be more different Holocaust movies. They're the most opposite extreme in Holocaust movies there possibly can be. The one is very, very realistic, and the other one is almost frivolous. There's a background sadness to it, but Life is Beautiful is about a father who's pretending to his child as if the Holocaust isn't really going on. It's really a big game. And, you know, like his son asks him, why is it that, you know, the store doesn't allow Jews and dogs? And he says, well, you know, there's another store I saw that didn't allow Australians and kangaroos. And, you know, and the whole way through, it's the son thinking that it's still a game until the point at the end that he realizes that really what was actually going on. And I think that, like a lot of times when we learn in Nach, and we need to appreciate the fact that, you know, from the character's perspective is how much do they know of the real story and how much they're discovering as they go through the story. So tonight's discussion that we're going to be learning about in the end of Perek Beis is really about the unfolding scenarios of Rus, Naomi, Boaz and how the story becomes more and more of an awareness to them. We have to put ourselves in their shoes and think, how much do they really know as it's actually going on? So this takes us, we're going to start on tonight's learning in Perek Beis Pasuk Yud Ches and flow our way through to the end of the second Perek. And it starts off with Rus's return home. Because now, remember, she went out to harvest or to collect leket in another field. And she happens to meet Boaz, and Boaz is very nice to her, and now she's on her way back home. So this is where we left them. And the Pasuk tells us the following. I apologize, we're going to start actually Yud Ches. Beis Yud Ches is where we left off. Vatisova tovoh ha'ir. So she came back to the city, because remember she's coming from outside where the fields are to the living area. Vaterech ha'mosa es asher liketa, vatosevi titin la es asher ha'sira misova. And she gives over the remains of what had been left over from her satisfaction. Because remember, Rus had been invited to eat at the workers' table. So she left over. And of course, it's so interesting that her first thought, of course, is not just the big I, but the capital W, we. So she's thinking about Naomi all the time. And as she returns home, she gives her from her food. Now, so her mother-in-law says to her, you know, where exactly were you harvesting today? Where did you do? Let your recognizer be blessed. She explains what happened. She explains the fortunate circumstances that she came upon. And she tells Naomi that the man's name is Boaz. What made Naomi think this is unusual? Meaning, what pricked up, you know, the senses in Naomi's realization that she asks this question, possibly?
Well, she has so much stuff.
So it seems like she's got a lot of food, you know, meaning usually a poor person at the end of the day who's gone to a field to collect, you know, has bare rations just to get through. It seems like she's got like a whole backpack over here, and either that she was working extremely hard, or that it must have been that somebody must have recognized or singled her out. If you want to be very specific over here, she's saying, Yehi maki reich baruch, let the person who recognized you be blessed. Where do we see the word lahakir elsewhere up till now? Where else did this word appear in the conversation? She said, when she first appeared to Boaz and he started being kind to her and he singled her out, what was her response? She said, Anachi nochriya, I am a stranger. Interesting enough, there are a number of words in the Hebrew language which work in complete opposite directions. So one of them is lahakir. Lahakir is to recognize, but nochriya is the same root, which is the unrecognizable. Right? So she says, I'm a stranger, I'm foreign, I'm not recognizable, why are you singling me out? It's so funny that the moment that Naomi sees her, she realizes that she has been recognized, that she has had some credentials given to her by somebody, and she doesn't know who that somebody is yet. But it's the same juxtaposition, because you can imagine in Naomi's mind when she sends out her daughter-in-law. Let's think about it from her perspective. She knows her daughter-in-law is a Moabite. She knows that her daughter-in-law hasn't been given official recognition in the city yet. They didn't even ask about her. So you can imagine what's on her mind. She's thinking, what's going to happen? Is she going to be scorned? Is she going to be locked out of the fields? And she comes back and she's got this whole collection of grain. So she's, somebody recognized you. Somebody actually identified you and gave you a place. So that, and this is the opposite of Ruth's natural reaction to what actually occurred. And now she goes a little further. Remember, Boaz to Ruth is a name. He's a very nice person and has got a very wonderful name. But to her is a name. So Naomi says, Baruch Hu LaHashem, blessed is he to Hashem, asher lo azav chasto yesachayim vesameisim. Blessed is to him to Hashem, who did not, Hashem did not leave his kindness for the living or the dead. V'atomer lo Naomi, korov lonu ha'ish mi go'aleinu hu. He is close to us, he is a redeemer. So let's unpack that for a moment. Who is the Chaim, who is the Mesim? Who are the dead and the living that Naomi is saying are being affected by what's just happened? Living is obviously right, meaning now Naomi and Ruth are on the they're attending soup kitchens. So thank goodness we have somebody who recognizes us and is going to be able to help us cut the line and is going to go special treatment. But more than that, what's the Mesim?
Not the husband.
Right, so now the dead people are her husband and her children. So what's she thinking of over here? What's going through her mind? She's saying, maybe somehow we'll be able to reconstitute the family legacy through this person. So she's thinking, what's happened over here? The light bulb has gone into the brightest mode for Naomi. She is seeing not only personal salvation, she is seeing bigger plan, right? Everything's popped into great focus for Naomi at this point in time, and she identifies him as he's the Goel for them. But what we need to think about to ourselves is that's Naomi's realization. Does Ruth get that? Does Ruth have the same perspective of the immensity of what's just happened? The fact that she walked into the right field at the right time. So let's see from Ruth's words if she does. Ruth responds to Naomi's jubilance, and she says, "Vatome Ruth Amoavia." Remember, the pasuk still dubbing her as the foreigner. No, Ruth responds, "Gam ki amar elai imanarim asher tidvokin adim kilu eskoa kotsira sherli." So she jumps in. She says, "You know, he told me I can stay with the sharecroppers and all the workers in the field." So she's saying, "It's even better. It's not just today. He said I can stay on." Did Ruth get it?
No.
Why not? How do we see she hasn't got it?
She's being practical.
Right, so it sounds, first of all, number one is Ruth's response is practical. She says, look, we're not going to go hungry for the rest of the season. That's what it sounds like she's saying. More than that, is this what Boaz actually offered her? Is this what Boaz offered her? Let's go back for a second. Boaz's recommendation was, what did he say to her?
When
Boaz said, let's go to the actual pasuk is, as you said. Yeah, she said, don't go to another field. And what? Here it is. He gives her a special place, and he says, you should stick with my
maidens,
with the young ladies. What is she saying, Boaz said?
Stay with the men,
or both of them. When you have plural, that's masculine, in Hebrew it could mean men and women, or could mean the men alone. But the point is that clearly what's happening over here is that Ruth doesn't understand the implications of the fact that she was told to stick with the girls. Maybe Boaz was saying, hang around. Maybe Boaz was saying, there is potential over here. He's not saying, I want you to find a young, nice worker in my employ. Maybe he wasn't saying that, but she doesn't get that. Because she says, in the RM, all of them, I'm spending time. So what you see, first of all, her considerations are, number one, practical. But more than that, she's not thinking of the prospects of marriage.
Right.
And that's why when Naomi says that Hashem didn't leave over from remembering the living and the dead, what's Ruth only thinking about?
Right.
the living,
right? Meaning Rus's epiphany, Rus's awareness of what's going on is only as far as the living. So now let's see how Naomi catches this. You'll see the conversation, it's so precise. Naomi's catch is the following. So how is she going to respond? Naomi responds, "V'atomei Naomi al Rus kalosa tov biti ki titzeiim narosav v'lo yifku ubar basadacher." Great idea. Stick with the girls. Right, so Naomi's very gently trying to get Ruth back onto the paradigm of this is a girl thing. I've got a bigger picture at hand over here. And in fact, and she listens. She is obedient to her mother-in-law. She says, "I'm going to stick with the girls." We don't know if she's getting it or she's just being very obedient or listening or caring about her mother-in-law's ideas despite or perhaps without understanding the greater ramifications. But you see what's happened over here is that although it seems that Naomi's got it, Ruth doesn't have it at this point in time. Very, very difficult, very interesting place that we're in right now. Okay? So this is where we stand at this point in time. Now, let's take it a little further. So if I could draw your attentions to over here, I'm just going to pull this into the actual Mepharshim themselves. If you could turn to page 16, the Malbim actually identifies exactly this point. This is the source 2 on this is Perek Bey's source 2. The Malbim is on Chof Aleph in the second Perek. He says, "Atomei Rus Samo Avia, V'Rus lo hivina inyan ha'yibum, rak mashakosov shu korov, v'ashal yedei kein, yas imohem chesed l'achayosam." All she understood was that he was going to sustain them and finance them. Al ze omra, gam ki omar elai, imana orem asher li tidvakun, be'emes hu omar lo v'kotid bokin in narosai. She changed what he had said. He had said the men, she said, "I'm going to stay with the girls." Rak ba asher hi hoi samo avia, v'sham en yisrach kim in an orem lo hevina ledayek bidvora v'choshu shekavonoso shi tidbakim on noshov. So the reason he says that she's sticking with the guys is because from her culture, That was done. So that was why she misunderstood him. She thought, I'll marry one of them. I'll enter the culture this way. And clearly, by this, she wasn't understanding the bigger picture. So this is where we leave them at this crucial moment. She stays now with her mother-in-law, and the next chapter begins. But what's interesting over here is that how long this next chapter we're about to enter into Perek Gimel is the chapter which talks about the plan that Naomi has to be able to sort of push the plans to fruition. However, how long do you think it is between the two chapters? Let's look at the first the last pasuk in Perek Beis is Chof Gimel. How long of a gap is it before Naomi goes into action? Right, so we're going to see the next parak is going to be at the granary season. But look at the end of the parak. The end of the parak was telling us that she's sticking with Boaz's girls until the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest. And she's staying there. So let's just put this into the months of the year. Barley harvest is around the time of Pesach, around springtime. It's the early crop. And wheat goes a little further along, which is why, by the way, the sacrifice on Pesach, the grain sacrifice, is the Omer, which is a barley sacrifice, and the sacrifice on Shavuos is Lechem, with the Shtei Lechem, which is bread, because that's when the wheat is coming into full harvest. So we're seeing a period of at least, a month and a half, 2 months, and in fact, the Yalkut Shimoni says it was a little more than that. The Yalkut Shimoni, back on page 16, one of the Midrashim on the text over here says that we can actually date it. Omer Rabbi Shmuel in source 3, Bar Nachmeni, Komokum Shenemar ad Kalois Katsir Hasorim Katsir Achitim. Any time that we have a movement of the from the harvest of barley till wheat, Shloisha Chadashim. We're talking about 3 months. That's a sizable amount of time. That's a very, very long amount of time. And you have to think about it from the perspective of Boaz for a moment here. Because Boaz seems to be very taken with Rus in terms of the chesed she's done. He seems to be very approving and benefacting to her. But at the same time, he doesn't seem to pull the trigger. He doesn't seem to take that next step. He clearly helps them financially, but he seems to be stuck in the same paradigm as Rus, which is the chesed with the Chaim. He's thinking about making sure that Naomi and her family are not going to run out of money. But it doesn't sound like he's got bigger pictures in his mind. It doesn't sound like the theme of what his actions are a bigger picture. Because this is a very long time to wait. Why would Boaz wait so long? What would it be if he believes this is right and he believes he can solve the issue? Why is he waiting? Why is it a 3-month wait?
Well, I'm just thinking she recently lost her husband. Isn't there an issue of Avelis?
Okay, so yeah, it's interesting, you know, between marriages there should be at least 3 months, definitely a possibility. I don't know how close it was to the loss of her husband and the travel that it was. I don't know, but but possibly, very possibly.
Also, what was bothering me, you were saying that, why did she want to go with the men rather than with the women? And I was thinking for the same thing. She wasn't thinking of anything but like being a laborer and providing for her own needs, working field. And she wasn't thinking about being all dolled up with the women and staying with the women. She wasn't looking at for a shidduch.
You're saying it's the opposite. She was saying, let's just settle. Let me just get down to it. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's a possibility. The Malvim is saying the opposite. The Malvim is saying, no, she wants to meet the guys because she wants to integrate and this is her caste, her culture. But either way goes. But either way indicates, whether you're saying it like this or the way the Malvim says it, is that her eyes were on the ground right now. Her eyes were on the next step. That's where she was. That's the furthest she could focus right now. Do you know those?
Was there another
Goel? Yeah, we're going to see there is another Goel, and that also deepens the question of the silence of these 3 months, because it's a very long time. But I'm trying to say from Boaz's perspective, it's like...
That's what I'm saying. Boaz wouldn't step...
Oh, so what Dina's saying is that maybe Boaz is keeping quiet over here because... Hey, there's another guy who can solve the issue, right? Now, Boaz is not doing anything to facilitate, but maybe somebody else will solve the problem. We're going to see that this fellow also has been waiting. It sounds like everybody's waiting for everybody else here.
Don't forget, he was very old.
Boaz is old. So, you know, so part of it as well is what the, you know, if we go back to the Gemara in Bava Basra that we did 2 weeks ago, the Gemara in Bava Basra tells us that he had lost, if Boaz is identified with Ivtsan, he had lost a whole lot of his family. Maybe from Boaz's perspective, he's actually very... very hesitant about starting something anew. You know what I mean? The pain of what he went through could be which is a barrier here. So it might be less of an ideological barrier, but more of a grief barrier, which is holding Boaz back here. Marjorie?
It also could be that the 3 months were Naomi showing Boaz what a sterling character she is. She stuck with the women, she's acting very modest.
So who's doing the waiting then?
Naomi.
Oh, it's true, but Boaz, we're asking why does Boaz wait?
Boaz, wait.
No, you're right. So you're right. It's showing that. It's showing that. We're gonna see that.
So
I mean, you could pull it further. You could say what you're saying is that maybe Boaz was waiting for that, but meaning he was testing. So what was he testing then?
If she was just gonna run off with someone.
Great. So maybe what we could do is we could say that Boaz is taking a step backwards, not because of personal grief, or perhaps inaction or waiting for somebody else, which are all possibilities. But maybe what he was doing was he was testing her. Part of the test is to see what her ideology is. Number one, but if you want to go deeper, he sees Naomi come back with a daughter-in-law who's not of their culture. This woman's a Gioris. So Boaz is saying, before I jump into this whole business, I want to see, is this a fly by the night? Did she come because she thought there was going to be a trust? Or did she come because she really belongs to this culture and religion? So that might be what's going on in Boaz's head. He might be waiting and testing at the same time. Very, very, very different possibilities, because the gap between these two prokim is not to be swept under the carpet. It's a long time, and he's going to have to be pushed into action. Mickey, there was a thought?
No, I was just going to say that he was testing her devotion.
Great, exactly. So it might be to devotion, exactly that point. Baruch Shikimans. So now, after this very big silence in the beginning, this is probably the biggest amount of time that, as the story goes on, we're going to see now. That now the gears move into action. So how does action precipitate? Let's take a look at this. The starting point of action is going to be from in the hands of none other than Naomi. So Vatomer lo Naomi. We're starting on Perek Gimel Pasuk Aleph. Vatomer lo Naomi Naomi Chamosa. Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "Beti, my daughter, haloi avakesh lach manoach asher yitav lach. I'm looking for rest for you, which will be good for you." So let's sort of try to picture the dinner table in Naomi and Ruth's house at the time, if they had even a table, right? And let's try to imagine what must have been going on for these 3 months. There's Naomi at the one side of the table realizing that the entire hope of her future and her family rests in the hands of her dear and beloved daughter-in-law. And there's Ruth, who's practically going about and very diligently and devotedly giving her everything she needs in terms of finance and sustenance. And nothing's happening. And Boaz is not moving, and Ruth is not jumping to the next stage. What's going to happen? You can imagine the amount of willpower it takes Naomi to say this. I mean, this silence that she's breaking, this is a remarkable statement to have to make, because she's the one who's cracking the silence. Yeah. But the way she does it in a very sensitive way. Where else does Naomi use the word menucha? Naomi says, I want you to have menucha. Let's think about it beforehand. Where else does she use that word? She's used it before.
When she sends away the girls
in Perek Aleph Pasuk Tes, she says, go back. Go back to your, she says to both her daughters-in-law, go back to your parents' home. Metzana menucha. Try to find, Hashem should give you a rest, some form of harmony in life that you should be able to continue your own lives. And the Mepharshim will say that it could mean that, you know, just financially, or could also mean build your own house, remarry, start again. That's what she's saying to them. Isn't it interesting over here what's going on? Look what's happened. Naomi at the beginning was almost washing her hands, not washing her hands, but she was delegating their lives to themselves. She said, you know what? I have to rebuild my life. You go do your thing. You find your menucha. What's happened in Naomi over here is she realizes that whose responsibility is it to find menucha for her daughter-in-law is herself. Isn't that interesting, a transformation in terms of Naomi? Beforehand, she was sending them off. Find menucha. I'm going to find you menucha. That's what's happened in the beginning of Perek Gimel. Isn't that beautiful? What's the realization? And Tanakh seems to emphasize it with this word. I want to do what's good for you. This is important because we're always the question as we go through this Perek in the back of our minds is, what's Naomi ultimately going for? You know, and we're going to go through Perek Dalet. Is Naomi interested in herself or Rus? And the pasuk seems to be emphasizing very clearly that she wants what's good for Ruth. It may be that she's going to be a beneficiary and she's going to have a child. But ultimately she starts off that it's going to be what's good for Ruth. So now let's see what her plan is. This is Operation Perek Gimel. Okay, so Operation Perek Gimel starts off as follows. In the next few psukim. V'ato, halo boaz modateinu. Asher ha'yis es narasai, hinehu zoreas agorin ha'sorin ha'layla. So you know what? I know that Boaz is our moda'atenu. We've seen this word before. Boaz moda'la'ish. That Boaz was this person who is this recognized character or close character in their family. So he says, look, he is our connected person in our family. And we know that he's doing winnowing. So remember, in terms of the time frame, our time axis in the Megillah is always by grain development cycles. So now we're at winnowing. Okay, winnowing is where you've got the grain, you're separating the chaff and the seeds, you throw it up in the wind, and the chaff moves away. One of the Hilchos Shabbos, which doesn't happen so often, unless you have a bird, by the way. I used to have a bird when I was growing up, and then when you clean their seeds, that's how you do. But so this is one of the last periods of the development of the grain in the field. And he's in the Goren HaSa'orin tonight. He's in the barn house tonight. V'rachatz v'sacht, you shall wash, you shall anoint yourself. V'samtzim l'sayich, and you'll place your dress on. Olayich v'yarad t'agoren, you'll go down to the barn house. Al tivodi lo'ish, don't tell anybody. Ad ka lo'isa le'achol v'lishtois, don't reveal yourself to anybody there around the fire. Don't make yourself known. V'hi b'shachbo v'yodat es mokom asher yishkav sham. You shall find out where he is sleeping. Uvas agilis margolosov, and you will come and reveal his feet. V'shachabt, and you shall lie there. V'hu yagid loch es asher ta'asin, and he will give you the next set of instructions. So very unusual operation over here. You know what she's trying to achieve. Are Naomi and Boaz in cahoots? It doesn't sound like they communicated beforehand, but Naomi seems to be confident in the fact that Boaz will be able to tell her the next step. There's a lot of interesting things going on over here. First of all, number one, why at night? Why is this operation covert?
So no one sees.
So practically it's no one sees, right? So meaning this has to be a very specific operation that no one sees. But also Rashi points out that the reason why he's alone is because he's in the barn house now, is because it's a sign of the times. Let's remember, we're inside the time of Shvat HaShoftim. that we don't have necessarily social order is not just the best or the best of times. So why is he in his bone house in the first place? Is because he's scared, right? What was he didn't trust people, or he didn't want trust to leave it alone? Okay, so first of all, we just see from the backdrop of what's going on over here, a little bit of what's happening at the times. Now, why is she doing sicha? Sicha means like literally taking oil. Okay, those are the days before all the brands of deodorant. This is people will take oil to embalm themselves or to make themselves smell nice. Well, why is she saying this? So the Ibn Ezra says, of course, she's trying to beautify herself. But let's remember, where else does sicha happen in Tanakh? What other context do we do sicha? What? By who? So that was also the beauty, right? Meaning that's the what other context? It happens by kings, right? The notion of creating a king is where the prophet by Shmuel and Abi, for example, by Shaul and David, they take oil and they place it on their head by anointing. So the Ibn Ezra says that it may be true that, of course, she is anointing. She is anointing herself because she's beautifying herself, like in Megillas Esther. However, it may also be that there's a reverberation over here of a bigger picture, which is, you are creating Malchus based David here. Well, the actions that you're doing tonight wield the power to bring about kingship. This is the precursor of it. Now, is Ruth getting that? No. Okay, so just again, meaning, is Naomi getting that even? We don't know. Meaning, when Ibn Ezra says that, that could be that's what is we see in retrospect, but it's hard to know if that goes down to actually what she was saying. Now, why revealing his feet? That's a very odd thing. What is this with the feet? Why? If she wants to speak to him, speak to him. Wake him up, wait for him to wake up. Why the feet?
Subjugation.
Subjugation. In which way, Marjorie?
So she's putting herself in his power.
Okay, meaning it's almost like she's serving him. Very, very interesting. Very interesting. I hadn't thought about it that way. So, meaning to say, this is an act of humility almost. Where else do we have it in Tanakh about revealing feet?
I was going to say that I didn't think that's what it was. I thought that it was more of like uncovering his feet. It's almost makes him on the same level as her.
Okay, so I mean she's bringing him down.
Yeah.
So that opposite direction or where we're going. So let's look at the model. On page 16 on source 1. Parashas, at the end of Parashas Ki Tzetze, Ki Yeshu Achim Yachtov U'meisei Chod Mehem Ve'ubeinei Loisiyah Eishus HaMeisei Chutzal Ishzar. You have two brothers. One of them, Rachmana Litzon, dies early. He's married to somebody. There's no children. What happens? She should not marry somebody else. What happens is that the Yavam, the brother who is the younger or older brother, will marry the wife of the deceased, and they'll create Yibum. And the child, the progeny, will be in the name of the deceased. His name won't be erased. However, if that person, the brother, is not willing to take his sister-in-law, but also Yevimtoi Hasha'ara El Azakenim, the Yevama, the lady who stands to be married over here, will take him to the gate, which is where the court is held. This man refuses to establish his brother's name. Lo Yavoya Mi doesn't want it. They'll call him, they'll speak to him. He will back up the statement that he doesn't want to take her. He will remove his shoe and she'll spit towards his face and he will be called This is how you treat a person who doesn't want to build the house of his brother. So what's Naomi really doing? Okay, so today actually is chalatz, literally means to take off. Part of it is untying. Actually, today I actually witnessed Chalitza once in the basin. It's very, very interesting. But nonetheless, it is ultimately the removal of the shoe. So what's Naomi's, what's the statement that Naomi's making in her operation? What's the sign she's saying to him? If you don't do this, you are going to be the person that everybody says is the base Chalutzanah, which is a negative statement. You are going to be the type of person whose shoe was taken off because you didn't allow your brother to find some rest. Okay. By the way, just symbolically, the what the Mefarshim say about here is why the chalitza is happening is that it's there's a soul which is looking for rest. There's a soul which is, doesn't have a legacy or continuation in this world, and by creating yibum, you're allowing some aspect of that soul to continue in this world. By not doing it, it's almost like the shoe. There's a separation between the crystallization process of that neshama in another form in this world. It doesn't have that place. It's not able to land. It doesn't have a body to land in. So that's what's happening symbolically over here. And what Naomi is saying is, you see, Naomi has given Boaz the message without Ruth even realizing what the message she's giving him is, possibly, is that, are you the Beis Chalutz Hanal? Are you or not? That's the question that's what's going to, the root awakening that Boaz is going to have when he wakes up. So now, let's see how Ruth actually performs this, and then we'll hold it here. So Ruth, let's try to get just a few more Pesukim in. So, Pesuk Hey, Vatomer Eleo, Kol Asher Tomri Eilai Eeseh. Everything you say to me, I'll do. She went and she did everything that her mother-in-law told her. Now, by the way, just interestingly enough, do you notice all the parentheses in those in the pasuk we just did before?
Yeah.
Right? You know that these are kriv like kriz, meaning we actually read it differently to the way it's written. And what's interesting about this is we read it as it is in the parentheses with the vowelization. But the way it's written is with an extra letter in each of those cases. If you were to read it just with what the text in front of us, what would it sound like?
It sounds like
Naomi's going there. Now, why is Naomi going there? I mean, it sounds like Naomi is almost saying, vicariously, I am going to go down. I am going to put on my clothes. That's what it sounds like. For you write a T, I will go down. Simnosayich, v'shochavti, and I will lie down. It sounds like Naomi's talking about herself. What could she be trying to get at in this sort of hidden, this veiled talk?
She could be saying, "I'm going to be there with you."
So it could be, and what Bachrach suggests based on a Yalkut Shimoni is that it's really a supportive thing. Meaning, I know I'm asking you to do something which is very difficult. You know, you're a tzanua person. I know I'm asking you to really extend yourself in a way which is uncomfortable. I'm with you. I wish I could do it myself, but I'm here for you, right? Which is basically what I want. Esther, what else?
But that ties into her at the end taking the baby.
Yes, I think that there's even a deep, as you're saying, is at the end of the Megillah, you see that she's going to hold the baby, and the baby's going to be Naomi's baby, because she's really continuing her family's legacy through Rus. And so what's being questioned here by just the Kriyuk Siv, the Ksiv Kriyas over here, or exactly that, is that who's going down? It's really, really, really actually Naomi who's going down through the body of Ruth. That's what the Pesukim are conveying to us. And then,
yes, but this clearly then shows then, meaning what's Naomi's intentions in Pesuk Aleph, meaning
good.
Who is this really for? I hate to sound obnoxious, but it sounds like Naomi wants it for her. She gets to raise the baby. She wants Ruth to go down.
Right, you're right.
For her family.
You're right. You know, you're right, Lynn. We're going to get indicators.
One of the guys in the field. So
you're right.
I can't believe it. I mean, bottom line is, it looks like Naomi's doing it for herself. Sorry.
So that's why we need to put these two parts into tension here. Meaning, the Pesukim are giving us different messages of what's going on over here. On the one hand, it's giving us the introduction that Naomi's saying that I want it to be good for you. And at the same time, we're seeing on a deeper level that she's also... Remember, when you say have a ksiv or kri, it's not verbal. Okay, it's not that she said that. A ksiv or kri is intimating a more either emotions or perhaps the attitude which is happening over here. So what the Pesukim are saying is that when you look at Naomi as a person, Naomi is a complex person like we all are. You know, if we were to analyze in the last, let's say, year, one of the greatest good things that we did to somebody else, you know, we think back to somebody we really helped. I think that we definitely pat ourselves on the back for being a good person, but if we were to really put ourselves on the couch and speak to ourselves, I'm sure we could work out a lot of reasons why we did that as well. I mean, to say we're complex people, there are lots of, it might be that it makes us feel good, it might be that we've got some form of recognition, it might be that there's somebody else, there's lots of things going on in our psyche. And what the Tanakh is conveying to us over here is that Naomi is equally complex. You know, she's doing something she really wants, and she's saying to Ruth, I want something good for you. But at the same time, we're getting the sense of that deep down as well, she's dying to be there herself. You know, I think, but I don't think it's, I don't think it's like you black or white. It's very gray in her. And that's what the Psukim are conveying. I think just the beauty of Tanakh, just to appreciate this for a moment, is the beauty of Tanakh is look how many levels of emotion are being conveyed, not just in the words, but in the words not said. That's what we are getting the perspective of. Let's pull this to a close, and this is on the following. Then let's start a discussion. The Vatomer Eloh. Okay, so she says, everything you say, I'm going to do. Vayochal Boaz, vayesht, vayitav liboy, vayovol ishkav b'kseh haramah, vatovo balat, vatagal margolosov vatishkav. She reveals his feet, she lies down, vayibachatzi alal, in the middle of the night, vayecher ala ish, vayilo face. He gets a terrible fright. Vinei isho shocheres margolosov. And there's a woman lying by his feet. Vayomer miat, and he says, who are you? Vatomer anachi rus amosecho, I'm Rus, your maidservant. There's so much to learn about here, but let's leave off with the following point. The first time that Boaz is being called a Goel by somebody directly, not the narrator, is here. Meaning up till now, we as the readers listening to the narrator who's been describing the story know that, but nobody's ever sat down with him and said, you're it. This is the first time that Boaz is being addressed with the responsibility of who he is. And this is what Rus is able to convey. What we're going to start off with next time, God willing, is trying to understand, first of all, she is making a very, very strong plea bargain in a very short amount of words. So we need to understand what Rus has just said to him and to understand what changes in Boaz as this conversation ensues. So let's stop here. Any thoughts? Emily, you had a thought just before.
I didn't understand why Naomi cannot just come to Boaz and say to him, right, you know, this is the problem. Can you help us? So then
I hear you.
And I'm saying, why did she have to do it in this way?
Right.
And so let's remember that everybody did not like what they did as a family, Naomi and Elimelech. They left. And so who knows that if she comes and she speaks to Boaz, he's not going to reject her just because there is all this
Exactly. But how's this helping, Dina?
So I think that it's a tahmula. Right? It's a way of getting to him with a young girl, with somebody who is there, and the 3 months that he learns about her and knows about her, and then she's the one is the one to come and
right.
tell him.
Right, I mean, you're saying it needs to be this way because she's got an in.
I don't know if it needs, but it makes sense that
I hear you. She's got the in that she's able to access.
You know, the adult people, the
ones... I should have sat down.
That's true.
So you're right. What's interesting is I think, you know, as logical as it sounds, you're right. It's just funny how many conversations we don't have. You know, how many difficult conversations in our life we actually don't. And it seems to be she's even moving from that, Jesse.
Well, it's interesting kind of theme that I feel like is forming even more and more, especially in light of the fact that one of the views is that the point of the story is to kind of give credence to David and his power, is the changing power dynamics that you see, right? So, like, you know, at first there was kind of push and pull with Ruth and Naomi about, like, kind of who's making the decisions. And then even here, you know, you have someone say, you know, wash yourself and anoint yourself and lay at someone's feet, and then you'll get further instructions. So who's kind of in charge that has the power there? And then he kind of creeps into this storeroom at night and frightens the guy. But he's the one that, with all the wealth and kind of power in the dynamics, because he's the,
right.
you know, he's the one that can redeem her. But then she's coming in there, and I don't know, there's something, and I can't kind of formulate it, like with the feet and like uncovering that and like, who's in charge and who is the...
Right, coming back to Marjorie and Karen's points, which is like uncovering feet, is it diminishing him or is it raising him? You know, which is exactly... Yeah, and it's funny that ultimately Rus is always the receiver, becomes the wielder in the situation. You know, the power play shifts as we see in this conversation. I'm very intrigued by that because it seems like Rus's silence goes through till the end, but she doesn't hold that power in it the same way as everybody else does. I'd be interested to see track everybody's power holding over here, because Rus does bear power, but she doesn't seem to claim it.
Well, the very quiet, kind of in the background, type of role. But if you also see kind of like if you look at some of the nidiot we have throughout Tanakh, they many times they also play this kind of quiet in the background but strong role.
Right. Right.
I think that it takes some time to learn the ropes. He did not know about this boom and stuff.
Right, so she's made the power play now. She has made the move now. Yeah, you're right. But she still doesn't claim it in the end. She seems to sink backwards still. So that's what you know. She doesn't seem to ever claim it fully in the Megillah.
So I was thinking you were letting us to believe that Naomi and Boaz had a plan and Ruth was just going to come and he would give her instructions.
I don't think so.
Right?
I don't think so.
I was thinking you were telling us. So then, what's wrong with the simple explanation when she uncovered his feet? That's a way of waking him up.
True.
He's sleeping. How else should you nudge him here?
That's a good question. You know, Helene, you're right, but the problem is that here's the issue is if Boaz and Naomi are not in cahoots, if they're not really speaking to each other, then something needs to be conveyed. So how can Naomi know that he's going to have the answer unless she's given him a message? Where else can she give him a message if it wasn't this? That's what's the. There must be something here. He's going backwards and forwards, and now she's saying she's putting the ball in his court, which is exactly that.
She's putting him on the spot. She's like, I think that's why also like that's even if Naomi wanted to go, that's why Ruth had to be there. And it's like putting him on the spot, like this young girl, like this is me, like you know me, you like me, like either make a decision now. You've been waiting 3 months, like. Either do something about it or reject me, but like.
Maybe that's what has to be in such a fashion as opposed to discussion. Yeah. He can sit and clear himself.
Exactly.
He has to actually make
it.
Very, very well taken. Very well taken. No, these points are very well taken. Have you gotten
I'm interested because there's a parallel between Yibum being like a way of imprinting a past generation onto a new one.
Right.
And Ami and Ruth seem to like align with each other at a certain point.
Yes.
So the power dynamic seems less relevant because they seem to be almost. The same person. So when Ruth says to Naomi, "I'm going to sleep where you sleep, I'm going to die where you die," she almost.
That's interesting. That's so interesting. That's very interesting because where you, it's what Avigal is saying is a very beautiful thing. Do you hear this? So when Ruth says to Naomi at the beginning, "Wherever you go, I go. Wherever you sleep, I sleep." That's actually taking action in this moment over here, where Naomi is almost descending with her. And ultimately, Naomi is sleeping with her. So that's an interesting shift.
So when she says, "I'm gonna go with you," it's almost they're one person. We're both bringing.
Yes, that's meaning that they've bridged themselves in such a way, and that's why when it's holding that baby at the end, it's the same baby because they collectively had that child ultimately. Yes, exactly. That's exactly it. Beautiful.
Very nice.
That's a beautiful way to end this. We need you. We need you.
You know, we can do what we do with the other ladies, but it'll be just a lot later.
Thank you, ladies. Thank you so much for coming.